CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show.
We're continuing our look at the book What's Yours Is Mine, Against the Sharing Economy by Tom Slee. Last show we were looking at the chapter What's Yours Is Mine, which is the first chapter of the book. You may have noticed I use the past tense when discussing peers. That's because in October 2014, Peers changed its leadership and mission. Natalie Foster was replaced by Executive Director Shelby Clark, the founder of sharing economy company Relay Rides. In December 2014, Clark announced that Peers would split into two organizations, the Peers Corporation and the Peers Foundation. The Peers Foundation is still defining its future, but the Peers Corporation, still using the .org domain, usually associated with nonprofits, is no longer presenting itself as the grassroots activist organization it once was. Instead, it is a for-profit service provider for people who work in the sharing economy, helping them to find insurance and tax advice. The tension between activist, communitarian, social movement, and business venture was resolved, and the commercial basis of the sharing economy has become clearer than ever. Chapter 3, A Place to Stay with Airbnb. If there's one company that exemplifies the sharing economy, surely it is Airbnb. As we've already seen, it was involved in founding Peers through its executive, Douglas Atkin, Rachel Botsman, and Rue Rogers. What's Mine is Yours was an important book for the sharing economy, setting out a vision that has helped to define the movement. The book opens with the story of Airbnb's beginnings, and Botsman also looks to Airbnb to set the tone for her TED talk on sharing. When leading public commentators like the New York Times, columnist David Brooks, and Thomas Friedman writing about the sharing economy, they look to Airbnb CEO Brian Chesky. And Chesky speaks out about the values of sharing. In March 2014, he wrote a photo-heavy manifesto-like short essay called, quote, Shared City, which started like this, quote, Imagine if you could build a city that is shared, where people become micro-entrepreneurs and local mom-and-pops flourish once again. Imagine a city that fosters community, where space isn't wasted, but shared with others. A city that produces more, but without more waste. While this may seem radical, it is not a new idea. Cities are the original sharing platforms. Airbnb traces its vision back to its roots. Quote, If you want to understand Airbnb, you have to understand our beginnings, says the company on its blog. Many sharing economy companies seem to have started out the same way. Some talented young people come across a problem in their own life. They put up a website to solve it, and they look to turn it into a business. With the help of Silicon Valley venture capitalists, they build a successful and growing company. In Airbnb's case, the problem was for some young former design students to pay for sky-high rents in San Francisco. In 2007, Brian Chesky and Joe Gabbia were looking for ways to make their end-of-month payments when a design industry conference came to town. They bought some inflatable airbeds and offered accommodations to attendees who would be interested in a cheap place to stay. They were inundated with requests and realized they may be a market for this kind of thing. And so, Airbed and Breakfast was born. Since then, the story has been one of hard work and growth, running up the limit on multiple credit cards to finance the very beginnings. They got an early investment from someone called Paul Graham, Y Combinator Fund. Struggling to get the site to take off, they went out to their biggest city, i.e. New York, and got the host to have professional photos taken of their rooms to make them more appealing. The bookings gradually increased, and professional photography continues to be the most effective way for a host to attract quality guests. Other maneuvers included a breakfast cereal pitch around the Democratic Convention in Chicago and a widely criticized email campaign via Craigslist. After early tribulations, the now trio of Chesky, Gribia, and Nathan Bechargesky found themselves at the head of a phenomena. In 2011, Airbnb had about 50,000 listings. And by 2012, the number had more than doubled to 120,000. By the end of 2013, it was 550,000. By mid-2015, Airbnb claimed 1.2 million listings. For comparison, the largest hotel company in the world by number of rooms was the Intercontinental Group with some 700,000 rooms. The number of visits booked through the site has followed a similar trajectory. Before 2013, there was a total of 4 million visits. By the end of 2013, the number had reached 10 million. By early 2015, it claimed 25 million visitors, and industry analyst Vicky Stern estimated that it was running at 37 million overnight stays each year. Well, this number is about 20% of the number of guests claimed by the leading hotel companies. Growth is not slowing down. Financially, too, Airbnb has become a major actor. The company is still private but continues to attract investors. Its $2.3 billion of funding corresponds to the estimated market valuation of $24 billion compared to hotel industry giants such as Marriott International, $23 billion, and Hilton, $29 billion. Its three founders no longer struggle to pay rent. Each of them is now a billionaire. By the time you read this book, all these numbers will be bigger. Sharing economy supporters see the Airbnb story as an inspiration, and it's easy to see why. It's a website for, quote, regular local people who make a little extra money by sharing their homes with respectful guests from around the world, unquote. That has grown to challenge the largest global hotel chains. It has shown that a personal visit, human-level contact, is a viable alternative to the impersonal and uniform mass-produced anonymity of the corporate tourist industry. On Airbnb, you can rent a treehouse, a castle, a room in a clock tower, or a houseboat. Who wouldn't prefer this to yet another identical hotel room? In an interview, Brian Chesky says, we really, really care about this deeper idea of bringing the world together. Airbnb emphasizes that many of its hosts are artistic and not wealthy. In Barcelona, 75% of Airbnb hosts earn at or below Catalonia's average household income. Airbnb's website and its advertising are both built around stories of personal connection, of welcoming hosts, of meals taken together, of friendships formed. It would seem that only the most cynical, jaded person could see Airbnb's success as anything other than a good thing. But there are two sides to Airbnb's growth, and they are revealed in the stories that float around the company. Airbnb's publicity relies heavily on inspirational personal stories. I do not know whether those telling the inspirational stories are being sincere or cynical. How could I? And to some extent, it doesn't matter. Perhaps Brian Chesky knows that the story of the host with an illness who wrote him a letter to thank Airbnb for saving her life always goes over well and so tells it repeatedly. Or perhaps it has some real significance to him. And he really does believe that his mission with Airbnb is to make it possible for millions of such people to find a little independence in this difficult world. But I do believe it is possible, even essential, to be skeptical about what I think of as inspirational technology tales. When coupled to an agenda with a lot of money behind it, we owe it to ourselves to ask what it is that we are being sold. Airbnb, in particular, relies on the personal narrative as part of its basic message, its corporate message, plastering posters of its regular people, hosts around New York City, as part of its campaign to achieve legitimacy in its second biggest market. And so, I have developed a habit of stopping whenever I see an inspirational technology tale and start asking myself if there are different stories to be told, one that has a different message. And when you search, invariably there is. So here is a story from the Airbnb website. Quote, when the economic crash hit, Tama's livelihood as a painter and real estate broker was threatened. A serious health condition was only increasing her expenses, with prescription costs at times topping $1,000 per month. Receiving guests not only introduced her to new friends, it allowed her to eat, pay her bills, and stay in her home, unquote. Clearly, Airbnb has been good for Tama. But here is another story, which appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle. Quote, Chris lost his home so that his landlord could make more money by renting out apartments on Airbnb. Chris says, they forced me out of my home I loved. It was incredibly difficult to find a place, especially because I have a really old dog. I ended up paying over double what I was paying there. Chris is now suing the landlord and his attorney. Airbnb is contributing to the displacement of long-term tenants in San Francisco and other cities. It has made it so easy to go into the short-term rental business. It is ubiquitous. If we are to think about Airbnb, we have to keep Chris's story in mind as well as Tama's. Here's another story that Airbnb does not include in its website. Quote, Ken owns a few buildings in Nolita, which is in New York City. He runs a nonprofit that teaches people how to ride bicycles. Now he's hiring private investigators to see what his tenants are doing. Ken doesn't like it. It's so not like me. It's like, how did I become that guy? But apartment 3 had become a crate of a hotel, charging $250 a night. And he suspects the tenant made $500,000 before he evicted her. He says that Airbnb that they see how lucrative her businesses were, and they refuse to take it down. So they're not good guys. Airbnb does not mention Ken or his tenant, but it does claim New York host Shell as part of its community. when New York City was hit by one of its worst hurricanes in history. Shell, a longtime host of Airbnb, realized that the loss for some people was devastating. As the waters rose and people had to evacuate their homes, many of them couldn't return for days, if at all. Shell decided to go online and list her space for free for those who were in need. Shell's story became more complex when it turned out that she was renting out several leased properties in direct violation of her lease. Her landlord said that friends staying over are one thing. Groups of social networking strangers is a completely different ball of wax. And that Airbnb washed its hands of its problem, saying Airbnb is an online platform and does not operate, manage, or control accommodations. Nor do we verify private contractual terms or arbitrate complaints from third parties. The stories that Airbnb leaves out start to paint a significantly different picture, which exists alongside the stories it promotes. A picture of neighbors, landlords, and tenants left frustrated and angry by Airbnb's business model. The overall debate around Airbnb is also framed as a narrative. So Rachel Botsman's story of Airbnb is a clash between the impersonal corporate world of global hotel chains and the personal, quirky world of individuals sharing the home in which they live. Again, I have tried to develop the habit of stopping to reflect on how this narrative matches my own experience and what I know about the world. And, in the case of Airbnb, the conclusion is that it does not match very well. I grew up in the UK during the 1960s and 70s, one of four children of two teachers. We used to take one holiday each year, and the first holiday I remember was in 1963 when, together with another family, we went to Aberdovey in Wales. There we stayed for a week in a railway carriage that had been converted into a place to stay, rather like a stationary caravan or trailer, but was certainly more interesting for young children. I was too young to remember much about that holiday, except for the repulsed fascination I felt for the rows of jellyfish washed up on the beach. Alive or dead, I don't know. But it was neither an Airbnb, nor was it a hotel. The rest of my childhood holidays were mainly booked through a farm holiday guide. We would stay in a self-catering or B&B style rooms, often on a farm. It made a little extra money for our hosts and gave us a great holiday. We returned frequently to Miss Whitaker's home. She was a dinner lady in the village of Ulfa in the picturesque Lake District, and she opened up her home for visitors during school holidays. The river Dudlin bubbled past the bottom of her garden, and she had a dog named Jan, and we used to play with, the first dog I felt comfortable with. And on the frequent rainy days, I got to meet Hercule Perrault and Miss Marple from the books on her bookshelves.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book What's Yours Is Mine, Against the Sharing Economy by Tom Slee. As I grew up, I spent holidays with friends in other venues that have been around for a long time. Commercial and youth hostels, trailer parks, and campsites. We were a normal family having normal holidays. Our experiences were multiplied millions of times over. In North America, the traditions are a bit different, but the rented holiday home or cottage is an experience familiar to millions. Airbnb's biggest cities are all major tourist centers, and Airbnb now does more business in Europe than in the U.S. Maybe, instead of an explosion of sharing, part of the Airbnb phenomena is simply an existing activity moving onto a single website from a million notice boards and booklets. Airbnb has its precedents in the digital world as well. Couchsurfing started as a non-profit website known as couchsurfing.org with a very active and involved community of members. There were get-togethers in many cities, and couchsurfing members even helped to build the website itself. Couchsurfing had a lot in common with Airbnb, but also some big differences. Members would host each other as guests and often spend time with them during their visit, but unlike Airbnb, one of the rules of couchsurfing was that no money was exchanged. The story of couchsurfing is an intriguing one, and one we'll return to later. The other digital precedents to Airbnb were the commercial vacation rental sites, some of which are still healthy and growing. HomeAway, VRBO, and others are still as big as Airbnb by many measures, but they have not had the same publicity, and Airbnb's rapid growth threatens them. The people offering a place to stay on HomeAway tend to be professional property managers who look after a number of vacation rental properties. Unlike Airbnb, these sites have existed largely without conflict with regulators for years. Counting the value of these disparate types of accommodation is probably impossible, but it is clear that Airbnb versus hotels story is a long way from a true history. The narrative of incumbent corporate hotel mega chain versus scrappy young idealistic startup turns out to be a cartoon version of history. The market for short-term rentals and vacation rentals is much more complex than that. Economical versus the truth. Airbnb has been controversial around the world. The highest profile dispute has been in New York City, but it has also run into problems in all the major markets, including Amsterdam, Los Angeles, Berlin, Barcelona, Paris, and many others. The company claims the opposition to them is the reaction of slow-moving bureaucracies in hock to the established interests of the hotel industry. But the variety of locations that have problems with Airbnb suggests something else is going on. To understand what kind of business Airbnb really is, we have to go beyond what political scientist Harry Farrell calls dueling antidotes and take a look at some numbers. In 2013, just as Airbnb was starting to get mainstream publicity, I was frustrated by the lack of solid data behind the debate. So I wrote a program that would go to Airbnb website and collect as much information as I could about all Airbnb listings for a given city. It's far from perfect, and there are many questions that cannot be accurately answered by data from the website. But it has been a useful tool for me to understand the true shape of Airbnb's business. Unexpectedly, soon after I started collecting data, Airbnb got into a dispute with the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman. The number of Airbnb listings in the city was growing, and the Attorney General's office suspected that many hosts were violating a New York City law that bans renting out an apartment in a multi-dwelling building for periods of less than 30 days. Schneiderman wanted the names and addresses of all 15,000 Airbnb hosts in the city. Airbnb refused. Talks broke down, and the company accused the Attorney General of doing a quote-unquote fishing expedition. In the wake of the Snowden revelations, the Attorney General's demand was seen as another intrusive data collection sweep by a government, and both the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the Internet Association, which represented the leading internet companies, stepped in on the side of Airbnb to fight this tooth and nail. Meanwhile, peers collected over 200,000 signatures on a petition to save Sharing New York, and Airbnb released a study touting the economic benefits it brings to the city and promoted videos in support of their position. Needless to say, tensions were running high. Sharing economy advocates presented the dispute as a conflict between well-heeled incumbents and regular New Yorkers making a little extra money to get by in a tough world. They argued that the laws were written for a pre-internet landscape and needed to be updated to allow new industries to grow. Airbnb claimed that we all agree that illegal hotels are bad for New York, but that is not our community. Our community is made up of thousands of amazing people with kind hearts. The company published a report insisting that its hosts were almost all regular New Yorkers, occasionally renting out the home in which they live. And many of them were using that extra money to help them stay in their homes. They told stories that emphasized the person-to-person sharing in the living space. We're going to continue looking at this very interesting book, What's Yours is Mine, Against the Sharing Economy, in future shows. So please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When a building is torn down, much of the rubble ends up in a landfill. But many commonly discarded building materials, like doors, sinks, windows, floors, cabinets, and wood, could be reused instead.
They're not thrown away because they're unusable. They're thrown away because demolition is faster.
Petrina Rines is executive director of the Birch Group, a Minnesota-based company that carefully takes apart old buildings to reuse the materials. She says the approach can reduce supply costs.
We try to reclaim almost 85% of the building materials from any project that we take on.